Hello, this is John Galloway.
And this is Jesse Liberty.
And this is the Full Stack Videocast, a pair programming experiment where we build out a full working application spanning from server to web and phone and everything else in between while you watch.
John!
Hey, Jesse.
How are you?
I'm doing great.
It's been a busy time, a wild time.
It has. Yeah, the year starts off busy. We had the release of MVC3 and a whole bunch of other things in the web stack. So that's neat. I did a big update on the MVC Music Store with MVC3.
Which is incredible. I have been working my way through it. That is a tutorial and a half.
Well, great. Thank you. Yeah, it's nice. This is really kind of our third rev of it. So it's nice to it's up on CodePlex, and we get some great questions and feedback from the people on CodePlex. So it's been really cool to kind of integrate that over time and you know, work with community to come up with a good tutorial that works for people.
Well, I've been having a great time. We've had 3.5 feet of snow so far, so I've been locked indoors working on the full stack. So that's what's happening here. So today, I was going to introduce what we're up to, which is that we started to take a look at the complexity of what we're building. And there are a lot of moving parts and a lot of different technologies interacting with each other. And we thought what we would do is to strip that down to the simplest program that would exercise each of those different pieces in moving data from the server to Windows Phone and back.
Right.
And so we created, and I believe we're going to recreate right now, the Dead Simple Server and a test phone application that will exercise all those pieces. Do I have that right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So I've got this slide here I put together which shows kind of on the server side what we're going to be doing. This is our roadmap, and we partly put this together to keep ourselves sane. But so we've got, you know, plain old CLR class, which is exposed via Entity Framework Code First, and then that's going to build out a database for us. Kind of magically behind the scenes, there will be a database. And we expose that with a WCF service that produces an OData feed. So at that point, we've got, you know, data moving out from the server. And then on the client side, we've got a proxy class that we generate, and then the phone's able to bind to that. I'm going to let you show that part off when we get to that spot.
Great. And we're going to show how those bindings allow for two-way binding of the data directly back to the server, and the role, what you have to do on the client, which is interesting, is that you can bind and get local two-way binding, but if you want to write that back to the server, there's a little bit more work to do in terms of talking to the data service itself.
Right. And along the way, we've kind of found out some interesting things. Number one, how all the parts fit together. Number two, just about things like, you know, it was very easy for us to get to read data, or it was step one was we got data from the server to the client. But then when we tried to do updates, we realized that there were a few other little switches we had to flip in order to make our server updatable when using Entity Framework Code First.
We should mention that all of this is also documented in a blog post that appears on both your blog and mine. Early in January, January 6th, I think, was the pub date on that, that we'll keep updated with this information. So as folks are watching this, there is something to be said for watching as we go through it. There's also something to be said for having it in written form. And so we decided we would do both to make this information as available as possible.
Right. Okay. Let's get started. Okay, so step one is we're going to create a new MVC3 application. And MVC3 was just released January 13th, but we've been working with MVC3 and NuGet for a while as part of this project. Okay, so we're going to create an MVC3 application called Dead Simple Server. I'm going to hit OK, and then this is going to bring up this question, do I want to create an empty application? Do I want to create an internet application? The difference being that this is going to put a few more things in place for account information, set a few things up. I think I'll just go empty in this point, and then I'm going to use the Razor view engine, although for what we're demonstrating today, we're not creating any views, so it doesn't really matter. Once I've done that, sets up my project for me, and then I'm going to use NuGet to install Entity Framework Code first and SQL Server CE. So there's a few ways to do that. One is I can right-click this, and I can say Add Library Package Reference, and that's going to bring up a visual user interface. I also like to use the, if I go into Other Windows, and then there's a Package Manager console. And
Now, we've shown the console before. Are you comfortable showing the GUI this time?
I am. So I've got a few different options here. I can do just code first, and that's if I want to bring my own database. I've got a sample which sets up some things for me with a blog entity and that kind of thing. So a nice kind of learning tool. We're going to use efcodefirst.sqlservercompact. So I hit install.
Brilliant. I like this UI. This is nice. Makes it very clear what's happening.
Yeah, this is definitely, you know, this is a nice, if you're not sure what you're doing, this is a great way to get started. And you can also see in the output window down below that it's actually, you know, it's writing the output for me that I would have seen otherwise. So yeah, here's this output, and it shows, you know, exactly what was being done. So what that's done for me, it's installed Entity Framework DLL. It's done some configuration for me. It's listed that in my packages so that it tells me what's been installed. And one other nice thing is that this app start gets set up for me, and this makes it easy to configure and do additional things. So we'll be looking at that in a second.
I want to interrupt for just a second and point out, because I think it's a source of some confusion, NuGet is brilliant and makes this incredibly easy, but it's important to recognize that he did this for this project, not for your machine. And so if you want to use Entity Framework on another project, you're going to do that again.
Right. Yeah, that's a huge point. I think that's really nice because we're configuring one application, and so you don't have to worry about, like, oh, no, if I install the wrong one, I'm going to cause problem for all my projects, that kind of thing. I can install and remove things at a project level. Okay, so we're going to add a new class here. This is the Person class. And I'm going to do a few things. I'm going to add a property for ID. And Entity Framework Code First has some conventions. It's got, if I use either ID or person ID, it's going to understand, yes, this is the key.
That's nice. That's a nice example of convention over configuration, which is becoming a term used more and more as people begin to see how much that can smooth the way and simplify programming.
Absolutely. So what it's doing for us, like you're saying, is it's the DB context I'm getting to understand more is kind of a nice wrapper over the object context if you've used Entity Framework before. And then it layers on all these conventions. So it says, okay, if you create a person context, I'm going to assume that this is what you meant. I'm going to figure out your database schema, and I'm going to create that database for you if it doesn't exist. So here, this is as we've talked about on previous episodes, this is our POCO class. It has nothing magical about it, doesn't have any interfaces, whatever. And then to expose that, we're going to create a context. We create a class that extends the DB context. And then we are going to create one more thing, which is kind of our collection of people. So DB set is this special collection class that holds things. So this is a collection of people.
Now, and when you say that holds things, specifically that is understood by the Entity Framework.
Exactly. So it operates like a list. From the point of programming against it, you can use it like any other collection class, but it's something that Entity Framework understands, okay, this is something where I can track this list of people. They have IDs, you know, it can track uniqueness and things like that. So at this point, we've got a simple code first class. Now, we looked previously at this app start, and this was dropped in as part of the NuGet process. And we can do some things in order to configure and set things up if we want to change any configuration. And what we're going to do in this case is we're going to take advantage of this create CE database if not exists method. So that's going to allow us to put in some seed data. So I'm going to use this person context. And now I can go down to this method, which has already been stubbed out for us. So create CE database if not exists, and there's a seeding method. And in this seeding method, we can create some sample data. So this is handy for at least two reasons. One is if you want to have, you know, say for instance, a drop-down list of countries or states source data, then that's something, that's a place where you can set that up. And it's also handy in this case where we're just going to create some test data. So here I'll say, okay, so when this method fires, we're going to be passed a context, and I want to have some IntelliSense, and so I'm casting that as a person context, and then I'm going to just add some things to it.
Great. A student of history. I'm impressed.
Okay, so at this point, I've cast the context I was passed in as a person context. I've added three people, and now I need to do one last thing here, which is save changes. So at this point, I've done pretty much everything I need to do in order to, if I build this and run it, the first time that I access this person context, Entity Framework's going to fire up because we're using something that implements DB context, and it's looking for a DB set. It doesn't exist, and so it's actually going to build out that database for me.
Great.
So now we want to expose this information via a feed. So I'm going to add to my project a WCF data service.
And let's just talk for 1 second before you leave the screen about the difference between a WCF service and a WCF data service.
Okay. There's kind of a spectrum of different things that we can do in terms of complexity and features for WCF. You start at a WCF, which can do all kinds of things. It can deliver data over binary protocols using all different kind of formats. Very configurable.
And that was the first, when people talked about WCF, when we first had WCF, that was all there was.
Yeah.
Was what we now call WCF service.
And kind of the trade-off with that is, if you're using those features where you want to be able to just write service code and then via some XML, sometimes a lot of XML, you flip some switches and all of a sudden you're transporting over, you know, binary over sockets or XML over HTTP or whatever, you know, WCF solves that problem. The issue was that it could make simple scenarios kind of complex. And so there's kind of a range of simpler things that have taken, that have come out. So there's WCF data service, which is what we're going to use here, where we use as AtomPub or JSON to expose and consume data. So it's kind of a lightweight way to provide data access. And then two other options that are out there, there's WCF RIA services, which works for Silverlight. And we're not using that in this case. One thing that it provides for you is that it cross-compiles code so that you can have things like validation or, you know, special logic that will exist both. It will be cross-compiled, so it will work on your server and on your client. And it does some other great things for our RIA service. Yep.
Now, the one that is here that I'm pointing to that says Silverlight-enabled WCF service, is that identical with RIA service?
I don't know.
I think they may have renamed it.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. I bet it is. And then one other thing that's just come out recently, which is really interesting, is WCF web APIs, and that's something Glenn Block's team is working on. And it's focused more on a RESTful aesthetic. It's very lightweight. It's kind of more of like the POCO class style of writing services. So very neat, but doesn't do exactly what we want to do in this project.
Okay, so, but if Glenn's doing it, it's worth paying attention
to. It's a very important thing, yes. It's something I'm excited about. But I talked actually to people who understood all these different technologies, and pretty much all of them recommended for what we're trying to do to go with a WCF data service. We're going to create.
So that's basically the guidance that we would provide to the hundreds of thousands, millions of C# programmers out there, is that if you're not sure, what you want to do is call the people who wrote this stuff inside Microsoft and ask them for a recommendation.
Well, or hopefully we're distilling some of that information for you. So, okay, so at this point, you know, there's the naive solution, which is what we went with first, and then there's the actual working solution. What we did the first time around is we said, oh, great, we'll expose a person context. That would seem to work once I had the namespace. The problem is that if you do that, that this will provide data to your client but won't accept changes. In order to make a read-write service, we're going to expose an object context.
So we're using the more general solution because that way we can write back to the server from the client.
We are, yep. So now I'm going to do a few things to set this up. We've got this entity set, and for this case, we're going to expose read-write. And this is definitely, at this point, our service is giving out read-write access to our database, basically. So this is something where, of course, for your application, you're going to want to think this through. We're going to be digging into the authentication side of this later. But
kids, don't try this at home.
Right.
Closed course professional driver.
Yep. Okay, and then it's already set up this thing for me about using Max Protocol version v2. I always like the latest version, so I'm sure that's going to be just great. One other thing we're going to be doing is we're going to we need to do a little fix-up thing. Here we're just returning an object context. And we need to do a few things where we actually expose the person context. All right, so I've dropped in some additional code here, and this is a little bit of, you know, special voodoo black magic, but we're returning an object context, and we need to actually create a person context and then change a few things about it. So we're digging at, we're grabbing this person context. We're doing this line here, which says, since the DB context is a wrapper around an object context with some additional conventions, we can use this object context adapter to expose that object context. And then we're going to do two things. One, we're going to turn off the proxy creation because we're kind of handling that ourselves. And then two is we are returning the object context. So this override needs to return an object context, and that's what we're doing. Then there's a couple other things that I just want to mention that are handy in, as far as making a debuggable service. So one thing is we can use service behavior, include exception details and faults. And that's something from a security perspective you may want to think about what you want to do. But in terms of us debugging what was happening when we hit problems, that was definitely very helpful. And another thing is we can turn on this use verbose errors. And that also is, of course, very helpful in terms of figuring out what went wrong. And you can wrap that in an if debug, and then that's going to make it so, you know, this is only when you're in debug mode.
So one sign that you need this is if you throw an exception in, what you get in the message is 404 error, not found error.
Right.
By doing this, you're going to get a lot more information.
And we also found, even running this on the server, you'll see these things where it says, you know, problems with the service, consult the logs. And you say, what log are you talking about, please? And so in this case, it will actually give you, you know, a stack trace. So one other thing that we need to do before we run this is, since we created we use the empty application template, we don't have an app data folder. And when Entity Framework code first tries to create that database for us, it's going to look for an app data folder. So now if I build this and run it, now here's a fancy thing here, is we've got a database created for us because we're using Entity Framework code first, and this is populated with our seed data. So when I browse out to this, it's looking for, you know, it's listing these, and if I type in people, so there's our feed of people, and if we look in here, we'll actually see these are, you know, we've got John Adams, Thomas Jefferson, etc.
Excellent, excellent.
So now we're at a spot where we've got a feed of data, and we're ready to hook this up to the client. And our next step is going to be going to the client side and developing those proxies.
Okay, so when we resume, we're going to pick up data service util and create the proxy, and then create a client that can read this data and also update this data.
Right. And so, you know, a little bit of this is review from previous, but I think this is really handy. As we were digging into this, our first go at this, you know, in honesty, was we hooked everything up between client and server, and it didn't all work. And so we thought that it was helpful to strip everything down, as you said at the beginning, Jesse, to the, you know, very simple level, and just make a class with two properties, you know, show up on the phone and update on the server again.
And I'm a big believer in that, because when you've got something highly complex that you're trying to test, you could spend more than a lifetime with the combinatorial explosion of which things are interacting with which others, and, you know, is it me, is it the code, is it the database, is it the transport? And by stripping it down, we were able to quickly get things working, and then retroactively, I guess is the word, or I'm not quite sure the right phrase, to take that, what we learned, and put that into the more complex material.
Right. So to recap what we've got here, we wrote a class. It created a database for us when it ran. Our class is exposed via WCF service, and it creates a WCF feed. And then where we're going next is we'll be creating a proxy and hooking it up in a data-bound application and hooking into that context and saving data back.
So pick it up from there.
Thanks, John. Thanks, Jesse. Talk to you soon.